Morning. Today's daf in Sanhedrin is Yud Aleph. We're starting today in Yud Amud Beis. We're going to be starting towards the top of the Amud with the words Ibra Chorosh B'Shosha. We're talking about the number of judges necessary in order to sanctify the new month and in order to intercalate the year. Okay, what I'm going to do now for the next couple of minutes is I'm just going to flood you with a lot of information. I'm going to speak really quickly, and I'm going to give out a lot of information in a short amount of time. And so I apologize for doing this a little bit fast, but there's a full daf ahead of us, and there's a lot of information to know even before doing the daf. Let's begin. The Jewish year is operated on a lunar calendar, and the Torah tells us that we have a mitzvah to sanctify the month of the lunar calendar. The lunar calendar is not that hard in order to figure out, because the lunar calendar is based on the lunar cycle, and it takes the moon to make a full revolution around the earth, 29 days, 12 hours, and approximately 43 minutes. What you're going to be hearing, Rashi says this in the course of today's daf, is that those 43 minutes are not actually described in minutes in the Gemara, but rather they're described as chalakim. Back then, the hour was divided into 1,080 parts. In other words, we take an hour and divide it into both minutes and seconds. Back then, so they didn't have minutes and seconds, they just simply had what was called a chalak, a portion of an hour. And they divide the hour into 1,080 chalakim. For our purposes, if you just want to think this out, there are 3,600 seconds in an hour, so they described it as 1,080 chalakim. It's about 3 1/3 seconds for every chalak. So in other words, when they knew the revolution of the moon around the earth, so they described it as 29 days, 12 hours, 793 chalakim, which basically comes out to about 43 minutes. Okay, so with that being the number, the amount of time that it takes for the moon to revolve around the earth, so therefore, what's Rosh Chodesh going to be? So Rosh Chodesh really could be one of two options, meaning the previous month could be either 29 days or it could be 30 days, which means that Rosh Chodesh is either going to be on the 30th day or on the 31st day. And basically what we're going to do is that we keep going on and off, 29, 30, 29, 30, so we're going to average out to 29 and a half. Now that of course is imprecise, because as I just mentioned, the revolution of the moon is 29 days, 12 hours, and 43 minutes. Now for those 43 minutes are not insignificant, they add up pretty quickly. So what we're going to be having really in the course of any given year is that we're going to be alternating 29, 30, 29, 30, but there's every now and then we're going to do another 30 in order to get to the point where we're getting to the average of 29, 12, 43 minutes. Fine. Those are your only two options in terms of being Mekadesh HaChodesh, meaning the Kiddush HaChodesh can either be done either on day 30 or on day 31. There's no other option. In other words, a month is not made shorter than 29 days, and the month is not made longer than 30 days. So Rosh Chodesh is either going to be on day 30 or on day 31, and those are really your only two options. Which means then that once you get past day 30, the de facto Rosh Chodesh is going to be the next day. The 31st day is going to be Rosh Chodesh. There's really no other option. Okay. There are a number of considerations for Beis Din in order to be Mekadesh HaChodesh. Now, before we do that, nowadays all this is not a thought for us, because about 1700 years ago, so what they did is they fixed the calendar. In other words, taking everything that we're talking about in today's daf into consideration, so what they did is that they planned the calendar for the future and they dispensed with Kiddush Chodesh. The reason why, very simply, is because after Chorban Bayis Sheni, after the destruction of the Second Temple, where we no longer have a Beis Din, we're no longer in Eretz Yisrael, so there was no longer a central location to do all this computation. So therefore, what they did is that they basically set the Jewish calendar in motion going forward, taking everything we're talking about into account and going forward. And so therefore we have a fixed calendar, but the fixed calendar is based on all the information that we're learning in today's daf. Okay, let's go back to a time before the calendar was fixed. So Beis Din now had a decision to make in terms of whether or not to add another month into the add another day into the month or not to add another day into the month. What was part of their consideration? So first of all, the Molad. Meaning, we want to know when Rosh Chodesh actually is. When I say when Rosh Chodesh actually is, I mean the truth of the matter is, you know when Rosh Chodesh is? When the witnesses see the new moon, go to Beis Din, report that they saw the new moon, Beis Din hears the report, and Beis Din establishes to be the new month. At the same time, however, there of course it's an astronomical reality in terms of when the month hits that point of conjunction. And when I say conjunction, I mean when you have an alignment of the sun, the earth, sorry, the sun, the moon, the earth. So when those three get aligned, so that's what's called the Molad. That means now about 12 to 24 hours later, we are going to be witness to the new moon. And parenthetically, by the way, the witnessing of the new moon is going to be taking place on the western horizon right after the setting of the sun. Meaning that if you go in the beginning of every month and you look at the first sunset after the Molad, so again, it depends how many hours after the Molad, but if you look at your first sunset after the Molad, you're going to see the sliver of the new moon immediately following the setting of the sun, and that's the Hizkachas HaChodesh. That's the new moon. So, consideration number one is basically the Molad. In other words, we all know when the Molad is, and parenthetically it's announced, meaning the Slash Shabbos, you were in Shul, you heard the announcement of the Molad. The Molad was Sunday of this week, approximately 10 p.m. in Yerushalayim. Okay? So that now means that that was the point of conjunction, and now about 12 hours later, meaning Monday evening after the setting of the sun, so if you would have looked in the western horizon and it would have been a clear night, you would have seen the new moon. Fine. So, consideration number one, of course, is the Molad. We don't want to make Rosh Chodesh too far away from the Molad, neither in front nor behind. But, parenthetically, we always make Rosh Chodesh after the Molad. Okay, that's, but it doesn't, in other words, it didn't have to be, but, meaning, it doesn't have to be like a day after the Molad, 2 days after the Molad, meaning it could sometimes be even in a lengthier extension of time, but if it's too far after the Molad, people are going to be looking at like this, based on know what they're doing, so the first consideration in terms of establishing the new month is going to be when the Molad is. But there are other considerations as well. For example, burial of the dead. So let's go back to a time when there was no refrigeration. So somebody died. So that meant that there were that if the person died, let's say in the beginning of Shabbos, so you're not allowed to bury on Shabbos. In fact, the remains is muktzah. So we're going to go now somewhere around 24 hours before we're able to bury. Now, before refrigeration, 24 hours is pretty acceptable, but you go 48 hours without burying the dead, so already there's decomposition and it's bizayin hameis. It's really it's degrading to the human body, and it's not within human dignity. Now, on Yontif itself, we're going to be learning this in Beitza. We learn this in Beitza, whichever way you want to go. On Yontif itself, so Yontif Sheni, so we're allowed to bury. We don't do that nowadays. We have refrigeration. On Yontif Rishon, we can ask a non-Jew to bury. Okay, the Gemara and Beitza on Daf Vav. But on Shabbos, we just simply cannot do it. In other words, there's no heter, there's no dispensation. Okay, now, Yom Kippur has the same status as Shabbos. Now imagine if Yom Kippur were to come out either on a Friday or on a Sunday. Let's say Yom Kippur were to come out on a Friday. Somebody dies, let's say, in the beginning of Yom Kippur. So now you could be looking at 2 days where we're not going to be burying the body. It's Bizayin HaMeis. Beis Din understands this. Beis Din... Bizayin HaMeis? If Yom Kippur will fall on a Friday, and a person died, let's say, in the beginning of Friday, so now you're going to go 2 days without burial. So Beis Din realized that this is an issue. This is another consideration where Beis Din is going to basically forecast the upcoming months ahead, see where Yom Kippur is about to fall out, and basically manipulate the month so that Yom Kippur will not fall out neither on a Friday or a Sunday. Not as a parenthetical note, when they fixed the calendar 1700 years ago, they fixed it for in perpetuity, you know, as long as necessary, where Yom Kippur will never fall out neither on a Friday nor on a Sunday. That's one of the considerations. With the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, it says Lo Adu Rosh, that Rosh Hashanah is not to fall out neither on a Sunday or on a Wednesday or on a Friday. They plan that in the permanent calendar, and part of that planning, two of those 3 days, meaning Rosh Hashanah not falling out neither on a Wednesday or on a Friday, is in order to avoid Yom Kippur falling out either Friday and Sunday. It's that Yom Kippur will not fall, right? So Yom Kippur will not fall out on Friday and Sunday. Okay. And there are other considerations as well. I'm not going to go through everything right now, but basically, those are a lot of the considerations that Beis Din needed to do in order to establish which day is going to be Rosh Chodesh. It's either going to be day 30 or day 31. With that stated now, I just gave you some information. With that stated now, let's go through our Gemara. Our Gemara discusses the following. Ibra Chodesh Pesosha, the Mishnah describes Ibra Chodesh. Ibra is a strange term. Now, we know what it means. It means the impregnation of the month. Meaning that basically, again, the month can either be 29 days or 30 days. Rosh Chodesh could be either on day 30 or day 31. So, the word Eber itself, to impregnate the month, what does that mean? Meaning we certainly, well, let's go through the Gemara side. Chishuv lo ketani, kiddush lo ketani. It's not talking about calculation, it's not talking about the actual kiddush. Calculation, like I just described, the many considerations that Basin has to take into account before establishing which day is Rosh Chodesh. The molad, the occurrence of Yom Kippur. Right, Rashi describes also vegetables not staying fresh. Okay, well, and that's in reference to Yontif and Shabbos going back to back. Again, with refrigeration, obviously, we don't think about these things. But anyway, but it doesn't talk about calculation needing a panel 3. It doesn't talk about Kiddush needing a panel 3. Now, what's Kiddush? Kiddush is the actual sanctification, which means that Basin accepts the witnesses, hears from the witnesses the testimony of the seeing of the new moon, and therefore establishing that day to be Rosh Chodesh. That's Kiddush. So I know what calculation is, I know what Chishuv is, and I know what Kiddush is, and the Mishnah is not describing either. The Mishnah is using a very strange term. The Mishnah's term is Ebor. What is that? And why do I need a panel 3? El Eber, so lo lik to shei memela la aber. So the Gemara says, you want to get to the point of impregnation? It's very simple. Go to day 30 of the month, make the decision that we're not going to be establishing day 30 as Rosh Chodesh, which means now it's a pregnant month. It's going to be a longer month. The Gemara says, what is this term Eber? What are we even talking about? Okay, so to that question now, of what the Mishnah means when it says Eber HaChodesh, so the Gemara is going to give a number of answers and a number of explanations of the Mishnah. Number one, Amar Abaye Tani Kiddush HaChodesh. So the first answer of the Gemara is Abaye, which is that what the Mishnah actually meant to have said was Kiddush HaChodesh. So Tanya Namehachi, the Gemara quotes a Brisa supporting this as well, Kiddush HaChodesh V'Eber HaShana B'Shlosha, Divrei Rabbi Meir. According to Rabbi Meir, Kiddush HaChodesh and Eber Shana is going to be done in front of a panel of three judges. So Amar Rava Vahaibur Ketani. Now Rava says, that's very good, but you are doing some serious editing of the Mishnah. You're taking the word Eber of the Mishnah and you're changing it to Kiddush. And as Rashi points out over here, that is a real, that's really difficult to accept. Meaning, for Rashi writes, for the Mishnah to omit a word, and we find all throughout the Gemara, Chesura Mechzura, that, you know, there's a missing piece of the Mishnah, and let's add something into the Mishnah. So for an omission, that's fine. But Abaye, what you're suggesting is an actual textual change of the Mishnah. Rava says, I'm not ready to hear that. I'm not tolerating that. So Elam Rava Kiddush Bayom Ibor Bishlosha Acher Ibor Leka Kiddush. So Rava now is going to give his pshat in the Mishnah. That's the following. Yom Ebor. Now what's Yom Ebor? Yom Ebor is day 30 of the month. Why is day 30 of the month considered Yom Ebor? Because that's the pivotal day. Meaning Basin will make a decision. Either today will be Rosh Chodesh or tomorrow is going to be Rosh Chodesh. So on this most pivotal day of the month where it could go in one of two directions, so we're going to have a panel of three. And the panel of three is going to make the executive decision of, are we going to be Mikdash HaChodesh or not? And again, all the considerations that we talked about and coupled with the acceptance of the witnesses, and once we accept the witnesses, so then they'll be Mikdash HaChodesh. Parenthetically, by the way, just because witnesses came and they said that they saw the new month, doesn't necessarily mean that Basin has to accept them. Basin could just simply say, do me a favor, guys, come back tomorrow, testify tomorrow. In other words, again, with all the other considerations to take into account, Basin can make that kind of executive decision as well. So, on what the Mishnah means when it says Ebor, it means Yom Ebor. On the 30th day, Basin will need a panel of three in order to decide. Should we make today Rosh Chodesh or tomorrow Rosh Chodesh? Now, what if the decision is, let's go another day? So if the decision is to go another day, so what happens on day 31? I don't need Basin. Because on day 31, we now know there is no other decision to make. Day 31 now will be Rosh Chodesh. The decision was already made yesterday. So on day 31, I don't need a panel of three. Umani Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Tzedek. And the Gemara says, and this is also reflecting the opinion of Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Tzedek, he did not Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Tzedek Omer, Im lo nir Rebbe Zmano, Im mikashen oso shikvar kichuhu bashamayim. That if we go day 30 and Basin is not Mekadosh on day 30, Basin does not need to be Mekadosh on day 31. Shamayim took care of that as well. Meaning because there's no other choice and there's no other alternative, we don't have a need for Basin to sanctify the month on day 31. The Gemara gives another pshat of our Mishnah. So far we have two pshatim in the Mishnah, Abaye and Rava. Abaye is suggesting a textual change of the Mishnah. Rava does not like that. Rava therefore says that the word Ebor in our Mishnah means Yom Ebor, which means day 30. We are now to the third answer of the Gemara, Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman Amar Kiddush Achar Ebor Bishlosha, biyom ibor leka kiddush. So interestingly, Rav Nachman is going to give a very similar answer to Rava, but inverted. Where on day 31, I need a panel of three. On day 30, I don't need a panel of three. Meaning on day 30, we'll be mekash the chodesh without the basin, without the need for a basin. Now, I know that sounds a little bit strange, by the way, and it's in fact even a little counterintuitive. Meaning we understood Rava's position, which is on day 30, a decision needs to be made. But once the decision's made on day 30, day 31, if day 30 wasn't established as Rosh Chodesh, day 31 de facto becomes Rosh Chodesh. But over here, how is it inverted? How is it that on day 30 I don't need a Beis Din, but on day 31 I do need a Beis Din? Rashi explains. Well, before we get to the Rashi, let me first just read the Gemara. Umanu plimohi. The Gemara says this subscribes to the viewpoint of plimo, a Tana that we don't hear often in the Gemara. Titanya, we learned in the Brisa plimo, omer bizmano, mikachin oso, shalom bizmano, mikachin oso. Bizmano in its proper time, we're Mekadesh. Shelo bizmano, we're not Mekadesh. Let's explain this a little bit better. Day 30 is considered its proper time. Day 31 is considered not its proper time. It's a little bit tricky to understand. Meaning, like I explained in the beginning of this year today, and in a given year, you're going to have 6 months on, 6 months off. 6 months are the Rosh Chodesh is going to be on day 30. 6 months today is going to, the Rosh Chodesh is going to be on day 31. And it has to be in order to get the average of 29 days, 29 and a half days. So what does that mean, in its time versus not in its time? So Rashi over here explains, when we're saying in its time, why is day 30 considered in its time? Because of the molad. Like I said in the beginning of this year today, the molad is 29 and a half days. Again, it's an approximation. The molad is 29 and a half days. So basically, from the time that we started Rosh Chodesh, so day 30, we're either going to have be hitting the molad, or we've already hit the molad. So therefore, in terms of relative to the molad, which day should be Rosh Chodesh? So day 30 should be Rosh Chodesh. In other words, day 31 is a postponement. Now I know we're postponing half the time. We all understand that. But in terms of which day is considered Zman, meaning when is the more, it's not, to say the more appropriate is a little bit misleading, because it's half the time we're doing it on day 31. But relative to the molad, when is it more appropriate? It's more appropriate to do it on day 30. That's why day 30 is almost like an expected day in which we're going to establish Rosh Chodesh, and therefore I don't need a Beis Din. Masha Ein Kein on day 31, where we're postponing, so for that, Plimo says we do need a Beis Din. Yeah.
The witnesses, they sanctify the month on the 29th day, but the molad is the 29th.
They're not sanctifying on day 29. In other words, there are two options, only day 30 or day 31. Those are your only two options. A month is either going to be 29 days or 30 days.
Oh, they sanctify the day after.
Okay. Rav Ashi Amar, La'olam Chishuv Ketani. Rav Ashi says that let's go back to our Mishnah and let's now offer another Pshat in our Mishnah. This is now going to be our Bai Rava Rav Nachman. This is going to be our fourth Pshat in the Mishnah. Rav Ashi says that the Mishnah actually is talking about calculation, meaning all the considerations that are necessary in order to establish whether the month is going to have 29 days or 30 days, whether Rosh Chodesh is going to be day 30 or day 31. Umay ibor, chishev de ibor. And as far as the usage of the word ibor, it just simply means the calculation and consideration in order to make the month a pregnant month. So, and as far as why the Mishnah chose the word Ibor when really what the Mishnah should have said is the word Chishuv, well, that's just for symmetry. Because the Mishnah is talking about also the impregnation of the year, Ibor Shana. There's no other way to describe it. So since the Mishnah is using the words Ibor Shana, so therefore the Mishnah is using the same language for Chodesh as well, Ibor Chodesh. So Chishuv Chodesh in Kiddush Chodesh Lo. So the Gemara says, but okay, but now it comes out that according to Rav Ashi's explanation of our Mishnah, when do I need a panel of three judges? Only for consideration calculation. What about the actual Kiddush itself? I don't need a Beis Din? So yeah, in other words, according to Rav Ashi, yeah, that's what the Mishnah means. And the Gemara says, Rabbi Eliezer, he did tanya Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Bein Bezmano, Bein Shelo Bezmano, Ein Mekashen Oso. There is no requirement of Kiddush HaChodesh, whether it is Zman or whether it's not Zman. Again, Zman means day 30, and Lo Zman means day 31. Whichever way we go, we don't need Kiddush HaChodesh. Why not? Shenema, the Pasuk says, V'Kiddush HaMishnatza Chamishim Shana. Shanim Ata Mekadesh V'Ata Mekadesh Chadashim. We have a requirement of being Mekadesh years, but we don't have a requirement to be Mekadosh months. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, there simply is no requirement of Kiddush HaChodesh. For the calculation, we need three judges. For the actual process of Kiddush, we don't need three judges. What have we seen in our Gemara in the course of these three answers? We actually have now three opinions amongst the Tanaim in terms of when the process of Kiddush HaChodesh is required. Well, the first opinion we saw was, there are, well, let me go backwards. There are four answers to explain our Mishnah. The Mishnah is using the term Iber HaChodesh. It's a strange term. So, the Gemara gave four different ways to approach our Mishnah in terms of how to understand that. In the course of those four approaches, we also have now gone through three different opinions amongst the Tanaim in terms of when Kiddush is required. One opinion is that Kiddush is required on day 30, not day 31. Another opinion is that Kiddush is required on day 31, not day 30. And there's actually a third opinion, which is that Kiddush is required neither on day 30 nor on day 31. The calculation requires the basin, but not the actual Kiddush itself. And oh, by the way, Gemara and Rosh Hashanah, if I remember correctly, Gemara Rosh Hashanah tells us that there's really even a fourth opinion, which is that either whether it falls down on day 30 or day 31, there's still going to be a process of Kiddush. Okay.
Going back to the Yom Kippur and the 2 days, how did they solve the problem?
They solved the problem by manipulating the months so that Yom Kippur will never fall on a Friday or on a Sunday. In other words, they're right. They'll suppress the testimony. And I say suppress, by the way, I don't mean in any kind of shady or manipulative way. So just simply say to the witnesses, look, just come back tomorrow. In other words, we're not ready today. For all the reasons that we just laid out. So just come back tomorrow.
So when was it Shemuel Akitan that fixed the calendar?
No, calendar.
Hillel.
It was Hillel, but not Hillel. Not Hillel. Not Hillel. Right. Not Hillel Zaken. Right. Right. In other words,
so he had that in mind, basically.
All this he had in mind. Okay. Continuing in the Gemara, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Amar Bishlosha. Now we are now on to the discussion of Iber Hashanah. Okay, so once again, I'm gonna stuff you with more information in terms of adding another month. Okay, a lunar year basically in the way I just described it. So it's going to be made up of, again, I'm ballparking over here. Well, let's ignore the 43 minutes. I know you can't ignore them, but let's ignore the 43 minutes for just a moment. So the lunar cycle is based on the orbit of the moon. That's 29 and a half days. So again, on the on-off, where we're going to be making Rosh Chodesh, day 30, day 31, so we're going to average out so that we're going to hit the 29 and a half days. That means that in a regular lunar year, we're going to be made up of 12 months of on-off 30-31, which, oh, I should say better, the month itself is 29-30, 30-31 is the day of Rosh Chodesh. But on the on-off of 29-30, so it's 29 times 6 plus 30 times 6. And that gets you to 354. There are 354 days in the lunar calendar. Again, not every year, sometimes 355, sometimes 356. But there are 354 days in the lunar calendar. In a solar calendar, of course, there are 365. And that's also imprecise. It's another 6 hours on top of that as well. But 354, 365, that's an 11-day discrepancy between a lunar year and a solar year. Now, 11 days is a lot. And you do that now 3 years going, and you're going to be falling behind if you're following the lunar calendar by a full month. You're falling behind by a full month after 3 years. After 6 years, it's 2 months. And now, Pesach was in April. 3 years later, Pesach now is coming out in March. 3 years later, Pesach is coming out in February. Okay, this obviously all is problematic. As long as we want alignment, and we do want alignment because Pesach has to come out in the spring. Therefore, what are we going to do? So what we're going to do is that we're going to add another month, meaning at Adar, the determination is going to be made in terms of whether we need to add another month. And we'll do so in order to coordinate the lunar calendar, solar calendar, so that Pesach will come out in the spring, and that, of course, subsequently, Sukkot will come out in the fall. Again, once the calendar was fixed 1,700 years ago, this was all put into the system. It was all, the numbers were crunched, everything was calculated to near perfection, so that now we have a calendar going forward where It's all been taken care of. We operate on a 19-year cycle, where of those 19 years, 7 of those 19 years are going to have an additional Adar in order to account, in order to make sure that the solar months and the lunar months are always going to be aligned with one another. And it is with near perfection that they did this number crunching 1,700 years ago. It just, for a moment, if we could just pause and realize what really, just from a Chachma standpoint, what an amazing feat it was that they were able to take all this information, process it.
One person.
Huh?
One person.
I have a feeling he had help, but, you know, I'm only left to guess that, but yes.
Well, it's also an experiment.
Correct. Right. These are things that spoke to them. These are things that take into calculation. Now, 719, by the way, makes perfect sense because, I mean, it is nearly perfect, but it makes perfect sense because, like I just described, every 3 years you're falling 33 days behind. And again, that's not even a perfect number. That's an estimate. You're falling 11 days behind. 3 years you're falling 33 days behind. Again, I'm saying by estimate. So to be adding another month about every third year, 719. I understand it's a little bit more frequent than every third year, but still.
Solar year also adds a day every 4 years to the.
Right. Correct. And right. On top of that, there's even more. Right. There's more calculation, but okay. So you got the basic idea. Now that was for the last 1,700 years, where the calendar is fixed before that point in time. So it was a decision that was made by Beis Din in the month of Adar, meaning as they would approach now the end of the year. When I say the end of the year, I mean Nisan being month number one. They get now to the end of, to the month of Adar, and basically they look outside, they gauge the temperature. And as we're going to be learning in today's daf, they gauge a number of other things as well. And through a number of considerations, what we're going to be learning in today's daf, the decision is going to be made whether or not to add another Adar. Let's start the Gemara inside. First of all, it's done in front of a panel of how many? So the Mishnah had a really interesting opinion, which the Gemara now is going to explore. And if you go all the way back to the Mishnah, back on Beis Aman Aleph, so the Mishnah tells us that Ibur Hashana Bishlosha Divrei Meir. So Meir says it's done with three. But then the Mishnah quotes the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, and he says that you start with three, then you deliberate with five, and you finish with seven. It's an interesting opinion the Gemara now is going to be discussing. We're in the very middle of Yud Amud Beis. The Gemara starts off. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Amr Bishlosha Tanya, Ketzad Amr Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Bishlosha Matchilim, V'chamisha Nosim Nosin, V'gomrim B'Shiva. So, exactly, give me a little more detail. What does that mean, three, five, seven? What is that? So the Gemara goes on to describe it in somewhat more detail. Let's say we start with a panel of three. And of this panel of three, this is now the preliminary discussion of whether or not we should be adding another month into the year. Should we be making other base? So of the panel of three, one says we need more consideration, more deliberation. Two say, no, this is an open and shut case. We don't need to add another month. So, Batel Yachid Bimiyuto. So now, in the panel of three, where one says we need more deliberation, but the other two say, no, we don't. We're good. So now, we have a majority. And the majority position right now is, next month will be Nisan. Done. However, Shnayim Omrim Leishev Echad Amar Shelo Leishev. Two are saying, no, this really needs consideration in terms of whether or not we should be adding another month. And one says, no, I don't think so. So then, Mosif and Aleim, Och Shnayim. No, Simonosim Bedavar.
Why not?
Wait a second. Let's just get through this. So the Gemara says, okay, so now what we'll do is we'll add another two. And we'll add another two now. So now we're going to have further deliberation now with five. Shnayim Omrim Tzricha, Shosha Omrim Eino Tzricha. Now of this five, two say we need more deliberation. Three say, no, this is an open and shut case. We're good. Next month will be Nisan. So Bitlu Shnayim B'Miyutan. So now we're done. Meaning, of the panel of five, if three are saying next month should be Nisan and we don't need to add another month, so then let's go with next month being Nisan. However, if three, however, say it's required, more deliberation is required, and two are saying, no, we don't think so, so then Mosif Amalem Ochnaim. So then we're going to add another two. Sheina Minya Pachos Mishiva. Because in terms of making the ultimate decision of adding another month, it shouldn't be done with less than seven. Okay, Ben, your question?
What?
Yeah, okay. So the Hani Shosha Chamisha Veshipa Keneged Me. It's still ultimately a little bit strange. Meaning, if ultimately we're going to end on seven, why not start with seven? Meaning, yeah.
If two said yes and one said no, why do you have to add two? Why don't
right. So two? So in other words, the answer is basically what the Gemara just got done saying, which is it's going to end up. It's according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, it's going to have to end up with seven. Your question of why start with three if we know we're going to end on seven.
But if it's a negative answer, then two upvotes one. What if it's a positive answer, why doesn't two upvote one?
Because even for three is not going to be able to make the decision. Three is only going to make the decision of should we add more judges. In other words, and for reasons which are beyond my understanding, we just want to hit those numbers of 3, 5, 7. Now, the Gemara is going to try to explain it to us, and to the best of my ability, I'll try to communicate it to you. But in other words, for Iber Hashana, we want to hit these numbers of 3, 5, and 7. Why? So, can I get me? Pligi ba Rabbi Yitzchak bar Nachman v'chadi imei uman Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, v'amir la Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi v'chadi imei uman Rabbi Yitzchak bar Nachmani. So, the Gemara introduces two Amoraim who gives us two different reasons why we specifically want to hit these numbers 3, 5, 7 in terms of the deliberation for the extension of the year. So, chanam can I get Birchas Kohanim? So, one explanation is because of Birchas Kohanim. We know that there are three psukim when it comes to Birchas Kohanim. We know that the first psuk has three words, next is five, next is seven. So by Birchas Kohanim is 3, 5, 7, so we want to model 3, 5, 7 of Birchas Kohanim. Of course, the follow-up question, why, what's the connection between Birchas Kohanim and Iber Hashanah? So like I said, I can only get us so far. I don't have a good explanation of what one has to do with the other. Okay, next. Chad Amar, right, in other words, it's, you know, something to think about, something to take home today. Think about. Chad Amar, we find, says Rashi, throughout Tanakh, that the king had conciliers, the king had counsel. And in different places in Tanakh, we find that a king sometimes had three, sometimes had five, and sometimes had seven. See Rashi for a reference of where we find them throughout Tanakh. Parenthetically, Rashi points out, where do we find that a king had a seven-man council? Rashi says, Achashverosh. Tosos looks at Rashi, and Tosos says, what? Achashverosh, really? But, okay, but Rashi says it, and so I'll repeat it. So, but anyway, you'll find that, you'll find...
Para at three.
And para at three, and again, right. Rashi says, you'll find that the 3, 5, and 7 are the number of council that the king had. So, to model that, so in terms of extending the year and adding another month, so we also want to hit the numbers 3, 5, and 7, right? Then I saw in the footnotes in the Masifta, right, the Kotzi Yerushalmi, that the extension of the year has to do with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's monarchy, and basically we want to want to reflect and represent that with our version of monarchy, so to say. I know we're not talking about the executive branch. I know we're talking about the judicial branch, but still, the idea of us hitting the numbers 3, 5, and 7. Anyway, Tini Rav Yosef Hani Shlosha V'Chamisha V'Shiva Shlosha Keneged Shomrei Asaf Chimisha Meroa Pnei Amelach Shiva Roei Pnei Amelach. So Rav Yosef preferred this second explanation we just gave, that the numbers 3, 5, and 7 represent the number of council members there are to the king throughout Tanakh. Amalei Abayla Rav Yosef Adayina My Time Lo Parshlan Mar Hachi. So Abay says to Rav Yosef, it's the first time I'm hearing this from you. I've been learning with you for years. I never heard this from you. The first time. Amalei Lo Havi Adana Detsrichu Mi Bais Aminai Milsav Lo Amalechu. So Rav Yosef says to Abay, simple miscommunication. I didn't know you didn't know. So I never thought to explain this to you because I assumed you knew. But if you would have told me, you know, that Mishnah in that first Mishnah in Sanhedrin about the extension of the year, Iber Hashanah, and the Mishnah says 3, 5, and 7. If you would have said to me, I don't understand it, I would have told you. I just never knew that you didn't know. Okay. Zman Nasi Tzarich Kedi Siman. Okay, we are starting now the Gemara on the very bottom of Yud Amud Beis, turning to today's Daf, Tana Rabbanan. The Gemara just gave us a mnemonic to help us memorize the next Gemaras. Ein Ma'avrim Sashana Ella B'Mizumanim La. So the Gemara starts off with a first protocol regarding the Iber Hashanah, the extension of the year, and that is that the panel that is going to be discussing is going to have to be invited. meaning you just simply can't walk into the courtroom in order to discuss. You need an invitation prior. You need an invitation, says Rashi, from the Nasi on the previous day in order to be included in the deliberation. The Gemara now tells a number of unbelievable stories. Unbelievable meaning that in terms of what we have to gain and learn from these stories. We start with Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel, obviously being the Nasi, invited seven people into his Aliyah in order to discuss and deliberate the adding of the year. Now, I know it's a little bit strange because we talked about 3, 5, and 7, and it's also a little bit strange because Rabbi Gamliel is there with the seven invited, so that brings the number to 8. Okay. I'm also a little bit confused by this, but anyway, the story goes. Hishkimu Matzah Shmona. Now, the next day, he's counting the number of people that are in his attic, and there are 8. Meaning eight people, one of them being uninvited. Amar Miu Sha'ala Shalab Rishus Yered. So Rabbi Gamliel's instructions are very simple. I only extended 7 invitations. One of you are uninvited. The one who is uninvited, leave now. Amar Shmuel Katan Va'amar Anihu Sha'alisa Shalab Rishus. So Shmuel Katan gets up, and Shmuel Katan says, oh, I'm the one. I'm the one who came up uninvited, and the only reason why I came up is just simply to ask a question in halacha, or perhaps to learn a little bit about this whole process, but really I'm the uninvited. So Amar lo shebeni shever uyis kol hashanim kulam lisaber al yadcha. Rabbi Gamliel says to Shmuel Katan, no, you sit down. Really, the truth of the matter is, we could do Ibra Hashanah by you alone. You're so knowledgeable in this area, but but it's part of the protocol that we can only do Ibra Hashanah only if you received an invitation. Okay, that is the end of the Braisa in terms of the Braisa telling the story of Rabbi Gamliel and the one uninvited guest. The Gemara, however, has a subscript to the story, a postscript. The truth of the matter is, it wasn't Shmuel HaKatan who was uninvited. It was somebody else. Kisufa Huda Avid. And Shmuel HaKatan basically lied. I mean, let's just call it out. He basically lied in order to save somebody from embarrassment. And he said that he was the uninvited, so that in order the person not be embarrassed. Now, I know a simple follow-up question would be, well, what about Rabbi Gamliel himself? In other words, why didn't he take this into consideration? But I guess the answer is that it is protocol, and there was an uninvited person there, and yes, an uninvited person is going to have to suffer the embarrassment of walking out, but the truth of the matter is he shouldn't have came in to begin with. But
he did take that into consideration because he knows who wasn't invited. He's the one who invites, right?
Right. I assume, right.
No. Apparently he didn't. He actually told his demo just to get like 7 people.
Okay. I guess we could deliberate that point. But we're supposed to be learning the model lesson from Shmuel HaKatan, which is that in order to save somebody from embarrassment, you yourself can lie. The Gemara is going to give other examples of this idea. Ki adi yasev Rabbi v'kadarsh v'hirich riachshum. Rabbi was giving a drasha. Somebody had terrible garlic breath. Amar Misha Choshem Yatsa. So Rebbe's instructions are very clear. The one who is the infractor, the garlic smeller. So please leave the room now. Amar Rebbe Chia V'Yatsa. So Rebbe Chia stands up and he leaves. Amdu Kulam V'Yatsu. And everybody else follows Rebbe Chia out of the room. I suppose out of respect for Rebbe Chia. Now the next day, Rabbi Shimon, the son of Rabbi, says to Rabbi Chia, "Amar le atahu shitziarta la'aba." He says, "What you did to my father, you really bothered him," meaning you and your garlic breath. So Amar lo lo teikazos b'Yisrael. So and Rabbi Chia says, "Okay, but this shouldn't happen." Now the Gemara once again is making the same point. Of course, Rabbi Chia was not the garlic eater. Rabbi Chia was not the infractor. But in order to protect the person who was the actual garlic eater and the one who was creating the disturbance, so Rabbi Chia, again, presented himself as somebody he's not in order to save somebody else from embarrassment. Rabbi Chia, just wait 1 second. Do me a favor.
Even if he left, that's why they all got up. Because the guy that had the garlic is still there.
Understood. Understood. Understood, but still, the basic model point of the Gemara is that you should, you know, right? Okay.
Why isn't it with them as that Rabbi himself was embarrassing somebody by making?
Again, that right? Similarly to the previous story as well. Meaning, I'm with it. I'm totally with it. Rabbi Chiya Me'echa Gamala Me'Rabbi Meir. The Gemara says now, in terms of this kind of behavior, so this was a Mesorah. The Gemara says this is a tradition, as we're going to learn, it's going to go all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. The Gemara takes us to Rabbi Meir, Detanya Maisa Bishacha Shabbat Labes Medrashah Rabbi Meir, Amala Rabbi Echa Mikem Kitchen Bibia. So the woman goes into the Beis Medrash and, extraordinarily awkwardly, and I would also say, I would also add inappropriately, she says that one of the students was Mekadosher but using the method of Bia. The Mishnah in Kiddushin tells us there are three ways to be Mekadosher a woman. Kasef Shtar Bia. The Gemara says that the rabbis were very against a man being Mekadosh a woman Bibia. The Gemara in Kiddushin says, Rav Mangid Aman de Mekadosh Bibia. The Rav would give Malkus to somebody who was Mekadosh Bibia was inappropriate. And yes, it's a little bit strange that the Torah gives an allowance for it, even though the Chachamim say that it's not Bederech HaTznius, it's not appropriate. But still, the woman comes in and says that one of the students is Mekadosh Bibia. So Amad Rabbi Meir v'kasav la get krisus v'nasan la. So Rabbi Meir writes a get krisus and gives it to her, hands it to her. Now Rabbi Meir was not the man who was Mekadosh Bibia. But again, in order to save the embarrassment, he writes again and gives it to her. Now, if he's not the one who's Mekadosh, obviously the get has no effectiveness whatsoever. But he knows, okay, just give me 1 second. But he knows that once he hands the get to her, the students are all going to follow suit. Amdu kitzvu kulam v'nasnu la. Now all the students gave her a get, and now one of the students who was Mekadosher was able to give her a get, but saved from embarrassment. But again, Rav Meir, in order to do this, presented himself as someone he's not. He's not the man, he's not the man who was Mekadosher, but still, in order to save somebody from embarrassment, he did that.
What about the ksuva payment?
What?
The ksuva payment.
Yeah, she should be given the...
Motzi mechaver al avaraya, meaning she has to make a, she has to know who the man is in order to extract ksuva.
Those who give a get, they have to give it away.
No,
no,
no. You can give a get without paying the ksuva. In other words, the ksuva still, it's still an obligation,
right.
But it's not. There's no contingency. The get and the ksuva are two separate processes.
Fentin has to go and get the money.
Yeah. It's a good question. I'm not sure of the answer. Reb Meir Mehecha Gamar La Mishmuel Katan. The Gemara says, and he learns it from Shmuel Katan. Ushmuel Katan Mehecha Gamar La Mishachna. And the Gemara doesn't need to tell the story of Shmuel Katan because we already heard it. Ushmuel Katan Mehecha Gamar La Mishachna Ben Yechiel. And he learns it from Shechanya. Dichsiv. Now this is going into Eretz Yisrael for Bayesheni. And dichsiv ayan shachanya ben yichil mimnei elam v'yomer leezra anachnu ma'alnu belokenu v'nushev nashim nachrios me'amei ha'aretz v'ata yesh mikvah Yisrael alzos. Shachanya turns to Ezra and says, look, all of us marry non-Jewish women. Like, what are we supposed to do? He was not one of the people who married non-Jewish women, but in order to save others from embarrassment, he included himself as one of the people who married non-Jewish women. Next. V'shechanya ben Yechiel me'echa gamar la miyoshua d'chsev ayom ha'shem al yoshua kum leich lama ze ata nafel apanecha chata Yisrael. After the defeat in the city of Ai, where 36 soldiers died, so Yoshua turns to Kadosh Baruch Hu and says, what's going on? Yericho, no problem. Wage war. Perfect success. We lost the first battle, and 36 of the soldiers died. Like, what's going on? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu's answer is, well, somebody sinned. So Amar Lefanu Ribono Shel Olam Michata. Yeshua says, okay, who was it? So Amar Lo V'chi Delator Ani Lech Hatel Goralos. It's the best line of today's daf. I'm not allowed to say that, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, look, I'm no snitch. Meaning, I'm not going to tell you who sinned. You'll do a lottery. You'll figure it out through the lottery, but I'm not going to say it out. So once again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu protected the not so innocent. Again, the same.
Protected with the killing of 36 people.
Huh?
Hashem, just
focus on. I understand there are other considerations, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes everything into consideration. We don't have the perfect knowledge, the omniscient knowledge, to take everything into consideration. But we're just focusing on saving somebody from embarrassment, from direct embarrassment.
But at what cost?
Again, but that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he could do those cheshbonos. We can't. Okay. Right. So, right. I'm saying but those are the considerations that Hashem takes into account. Right. So, V'chi de la Torah ani lecha tel garolos. V'yibayzem ha-mimoshe dechsev in the Gemara. It says, ad ana me'antem. after the giving of the man, the instructions Hashem said is nobody's to go out and collect on Shabbos because it's not coming down on Shabbos. And a few of the Jewish people in the Midbar went down Shabbos in order to collect. And Hashem was so upset, and Hashem said, Ad ana me'antem. All of you are rebelling. Now it's not all, it's just some. But again, in order to save a little bit of disgrace to the people who were infractors, so therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu couched it in a way where it kind of saved the embarrassment for the people who were not necessarily deserving of being saved the embarrassment. And again, the theme of this entire first Amud of today's daf is protect the dignity of people who are not necessarily people needing to be protected, but still. And the Gemara has all this as a Masara. Tana Rabbanan Mishamesu Nevi'im Achronim Chag Ezechayim Malach Nistaku Ruach HaKadosh Meisrael. When the Nevi'im Achronim died, the last of the Nevi'im, this is the beginning of the Second Temple. Chag Ezechayim Malachi, so no longer do we have Ruach HaKodesh. And by the way, there is a complimentary Gemara in Yuma that describes a process in which a lot of the Ruach HaKodesh goes away, having to do with the destruction of the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. See the Gemara in Yuma. V'afa pikein ayim mishamshim bevas kol, but still there was some sort of minimal, so to say, connection and communication with the Shechina. It's what's called a bas kol. So pamachas ayim mesubim alias beis guria birichu v'nitna aleim bas kol min hashamayim. Yesh kan echa shereisha tishra ala Shechina. Now, in the parentheses, we have Moshe Rabbeinu, but I understand that presents its own set of problems. Somebody in this generation, the Bakol says, has the ability to receive Hashra Shechina. Significant Hashra Shechina, but he was just simply born in the wrong generation. Look, and the generation is holding him back. So Nitznu Chachamim Mesenein Bilal Hazakin, but everyone understood that the Baskal was referring to Hilah Hazakin, Ukushemes Amru Alav, Hai Chasid Ahai Anav, Tamidosha Ezra. And when he died, they said that this man was a chassid, he was an anav, he was humble, he was a student of Ezra. He was not a direct student of Ezra. Historically, Ezra came earlier. Ezra was the beginning of Bayis Sheni. Hillel was towards the middle of Bayis Sheni. In other words, remember, after Ezra comes Shimon HaTzadik. He was Shayari Knesset HaGedolah. He was the end of the period of the Knesset HaGedolah. Then the five Zugos. And Hillel is the fifth of the five Zugos. So you're approximately six generations after Ezra. He's not a direct student, but ideologically, he shares a lot in common with Ezra. And the Gemara tells a similar story involving Shmuel HaKatan, where, once again, he could have had Hashra Shechina, but he was just simply born in the wrong generation, and he's being held back by the generation. He was a student of Hillel, and again, I'll make the same point. Not a direct student of Hillel. Shmuel HaKatan lived in the period of Rabbi Gamliel. This is the end of Bayis Sheni, but again, the same idea that he was in terms of his hashkafa and ideology, a follower of Hillel. Now, Shmuel HaKatan is dying, and now he's forecasting Churban Bayis Sheni. In other words, even though he doesn't have Nevuah, but at the time of his death, he's saying things which are prophetic. He says, Shimon, who was the Nasi, and Yishmael, who was the Kohen Gadol, so the Charava, they're going to be killed. He's describing basically Asara Aruge Malchus. So two of them are going to be dying by the sword. The Chavro, the Ketala, and the colleagues are going to be dying other forms of death. Again, it's a forecast of Asara Aruge Malchus. Vishar Amalabiza, the nation is going to be plundered. V'akasikina tidin lamesa alama. And many tragedies are going to occur in the world. Yehuda ben Bava bikshu lamar kain. Now they also wanted to eulogize Yehuda ben Bava in a similar way. Now he's one of the Asara Hurugim Malchus. El shenitra v'shashin maspina mal Hurugim Malchus. However, the Gemara says, as what seems to be a blanket rule, we don't eulogize Hurugim Malchus. Rashi says that it is a time of governmental oppression, and basically we want to just simply bury the bodies as quickly as possible, and we don't have the time to go through the process of eulogy. That's how Rashi describes the Gemara. Okay. We'll stop over here. Obviously, there's a lot more to go in today's daf. I apologize for cutting us short, but tomorrow we will look to pick up. Tomorrow we get into the real details of the number of considerations that have to be taken into account in order to extend the year, in order to add another base. That is where we're going to be starting tomorrow. Today, we finished up our discussion of Iber HaChodesh, in terms of injecting another day into the month, describing what the Mishnah means by the word Ibor, four different approaches in the Gemara. We went through Ibor HaShana, gave just a brief description of why it is that we have to be Ma'abar HaShana. We talked about the Mishnah in terms of the panel and how many it's done. Reb Meir says three, Rosh Shimon Gamliel says 3, 5, 7. In other words, deliberated with 3 to 5 to 7. The Gemara gave us more rich detail in terms of how this deliberation worked. And then we discussed today a really important concept regarding protecting the dignity of people who are not so innocent, but still saving people from public embarrassment, even people who don't necessarily deserve it. And then some more words about various Tanayim and their significance and the loss of Ruach HaKodesh.